As soon as that fly hit the water, boom, took. And my drag was set down all the way, so it's like, still pulling.
It was impressive, man. These guys, they're out in the wilderness, you know, they're eating big stuff.
Man. That moment's gonna live in my head forever.
Welcome back to another episode of Wildlife Outdoors. Today we have the first time we've had a guest on for three times. So welcome back, Marco, our good buddy from Texas. He recently went on an amazing trip down to South America, and we're excited to talk about that. So I guess we'll let him give a little introduction and let us know what we're talking about.
Hey, everybody. Marco Escamillo, Tex Tiburon on Instagram. We just got back about 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago from Colombia. We went out with, it was a Colombia fishing expeditions, owner Mauricio, great folks. Everything was just beyond what you could expect from an outfit, from the food, the wildlife, scenery, the fishing, the guides, just everything in general was just top notch. Beautiful place. Never been to Colombia. Never really been out of the country like that. Been to Mexico. Such a beautiful place. The people were amazing. Everything about it was just beyond more than what I could ask for. I didn't know what to expect, but yeah, it surpassed my expectations for sure.
That's freaking awesome. So I guess we could start at the beginning. And how did this trip even come about?
So I was fishing the A-Team tournament down in Port O'Connor back in at the end of October of this past year. And I happened to run into Casillo Silva out there. He was fishing the tournament as well. And he said hi to me. We shook hands and whatnot. And shortly after, I think the following week, I saw he posted on Instagram that he was putting a trip together for Colombia. And I don't know, part of my imagination, you know, kind of went off, and I just asked, I said, hey, what's the information? Like, I just, all the information, I need it all. And he sent me an email, sent me all the info, a pamphlet, and I looked through it for about a couple days. I was a little nervous about it just because, you know, I'd never done anything like that before. And Denise pushed me into it. She's like, hey, go do it. Like, what else? You know, what's stopping you? And I was like, okay, well, you know, if I have your support on it, it makes me feel better. So I started prepping flies, doing a lot of research, asking folks for information. And, it just kind of came together on its own. We had to postpone our trip in February. That's when we were actually supposed to go out there. And, it got postponed due to weather reasons, mm-hmm. which, I'm very thankful for, because apparently that week the rivers were just blown out. It was just chocolate milk. People that had gone down to Colombia with other outfitters, they actually caught a lot of catfish, and you couldn't see through the water. But we still made the trip down, and at the end of March, and I mean, we had a blast. We plan on going back again. So
awesome.
If anybody's interested, let me know and I'll get you in contact with the right man.
I'm too broke for that, bro. So how long were y'all there? How long was y'all's trip?
Our trip was 10 days. 6 of those 10 days were just fishing the whole day. I mean, you'd leave the camp and it was almost dark. Come back and it was dark. The other days we traveled. So the way it went, you know, I don't want to get too much into it just because it was a lot of travel. Flew into Bogota, flew out of Austin to Miami, jumped on a trip from Miami over to Bogota. First day we get to Bogota, we're staying about a couple minutes from the airport. Beautiful hotel. Stayed the night, waited for everybody to come in. Everybody was there that same evening. And then I think one person got there the next morning. That next morning around 11 or so, we were picked up by some cab drivers. And they drove us 3.5 hours to Villa Vicencio, which is a small little town. It's not as big as Bogota. Still beautiful, though. So much going on at night. We get there. We stay at another hotel from there. They had a small little airport in that town that was like maybe 4 minutes from that hotel. We flew on a charter plane. This plane was tiny. It was small. Like four of us fit in it plus luggage. So they had to separate both of our group into two different groups and fly us out. And that was 2 hours to Curambio. Y'all ever seen the movie The Rundown with The Rock?
Yeah. Yeah. I like that movie.
Yeah.
Remember that airport that he flies into in Brazil and it's just a dirt road and there's like a bar right off there? Okay. Picture that. That's what we flew into. So we get there and I'm kind of looking around. I'm like, well, so we're waiting on the other group. The guy has to fly back another 2 hours and then pick them up and then another 2 hours back. So we walk into that little bar and I mean, it's just, you know, wide open. The owner of the bar starts bringing us beers. We're hanging out, just throwing some back. Then out of the blue, we hear a helicopter in the distance and this military chopper lands. And we're like, what the heck is going on? We're kind of freaking out because, you know, we don't know what's going on down there. And this one guy gets off and he's got his wife and a couple kids with him, some other people. And this tank truck pulls up to fuel up the helicopter. Well, turns out he's the colonel for the military and it was his birthday. So they were just kind of going from town to town. So he came in, shook our hands, and I thought he was cartel at first. I'm not gonna lie to you. I was like, kind of put my head down. I'm like, I don't need to stare at anybody right now. But yeah, it turned out he was a colonel for the military and super nice guy. Fueled up, left. Excuse me. So yeah, we waited on the other group to get there. They got there. The outfitter showed up and he took us to, I don't know if I'd call it a restaurant, but it was more like a smokehouse, I guess. We ate tons of beef, pork, chicken, potatoes, yuca till our fill. And then from there, we took that trail, dirt road. It was a 4 hour drive just through a bunch of trails. And it was rough, man. I mean, I had my head out the window the whole time and I was coughing up dust by the time we got to camp that night.
Damn.
Got to camp. So that's what, 2 days of travel already? Get to camp, and Sunday morning was the first day that we fished.
Wow.
Yeah, it was insane, man. I mean, we saw foxes, different species of coyotes. During that trail ride, there's a bunch of little towns in between. This guy, I mean, his camp is way, he has two camps on that river section. It's way out there, man. I mean, when I mean these fish aren't pressured, I mean, they're not pressured. They don't see another person. You know what I mean? It was interesting. Never fished those kinds of waters before. So
come that first day of fishing, you wake up, you're getting ready to go, man. What does it feel like knowing that you're getting to fish Colombia for the very first time ever?
I was a little nervous because I didn't know what to expect. But at the same time, it was like that anxiousness and like, I need to get that first fish because I'm not going to lie to you. One of my biggest concerns was putting together a trip just like that to go on, putting that money into it, getting prepped for that. My biggest concern was coming back skunked. I said, if I go and I come back skunked, I don't know if I'll do another trip like this. Like I kind of had to break myself out of that and relax a bit because it was messing with me the night before. Now, they did a really good job at making us feel comfortable immediately. We woke up, they had breakfast ready for us. Most days we were eating, they're called arepas, which is like little corn cakes. They're like a little flat corn cake and they're delicious and they go with everything. So we had that and eggs in the morning, coffee, fresh, fruit juices, waters, beer, of course. And, you know, we get on these boats and as soon as we get out on the river, that nervousness and the anxiousness went away. And now I'm just kind of going with the flow. I'm like, wherever we go, you know? It was interesting. I think I feel like that most times that we hit up a section of river that we've never fished before, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, I just didn't know what to expect. So it was that, you know, going into the unknown type deal. And it's not a bad way to live, I think.
Yeah,
not at all. So what was the camp like? Was it like a primitive camp? Were y'all staying in a hut? Was it a full structure?
So we stayed at two different camps. Originally, the plan was to fish one half the week and the other half of the week. the first camp was this gated off area right on the river. And you pull in, it was super dark when we got in, so I couldn't see much. But that next morning, I kind of looked at the camp and looked around. We're staying in these huts, and there's no door, there's no window. The restrooms are cornered off from the huts. They're curtains. You know, it's just concrete blocks, curtains. Mm-hmm. That's okay. You know, we're all used to that. We've all camped, you know?
Yeah.
The huts were just, like I said, there are sections of rooms put together. It's a bed with a huge mosquito net over it, a chair and a little like nightstand table with a fan hookup. So, I mean, there wasn't much to it. We didn't spend much time in those rooms besides when we were going to bed. Mm-hmm. The center of that area had a pavilion that was, it was a nice section. It was just a bunch of concrete on the floor, the posts, some palm tree covering. And that's where we'd hang out that, you know, at night and tie on, you know, whatever you're going to tie on or prep up, whatever you got to prep up, whether it be your rod or your flies. It was comfortable. I could say that. The beds were comfy. I think my only concern was this bat that was kind of pestering me the whole trip. He kept coming into the room, and there was times where I woke up in the middle of the night and I'd open my eyes and I'd see him, and him or her, depending on what it was, but it would swoop down pretty close to that mosquito net. And I'm like, the last thing I need to do is get the damn rabies out here, you know? And we're far. I mean, I don't even know what the closest hospital was to that place. Hours away, obviously, I would say. But besides that, I mean, I didn't feel unsafe once. By the second night, I was like, whatever, he's not going to come in here. So,
yeah.
It was neat, man. Really cool. I got some pictures too, so I'll share them with you guys.
Yeah. I'm excited to see that. So, did you get a good feel of what the local life was there? What the culture was like?
Yeah, definitely. From different areas, from Bogota. I mean, I'm not even joking when I say this. There was a gas station less than a quarter mile away from our hotel when we landed there. We went over there and it's a gas station, and there's a bunch of tables everywhere, and people are hanging out and drinking beer there. So we kind of looked around. We're like, hey, do we want to hang out here and have a beer? And we're like, yeah. So we bought like a couple six packs. Dude, I think a six pack out there was like $2 or $3.
Oh, wow.
So all of us got a six pack each, and we hung out at the gas station that first day. We're just sitting there drinking beer, and it was just different. You know, it's like, well, you can't do this back home. Let's live it up. Via Vicencio, small town, embracing, you know, like people are very, you know, they embraced us. Everybody was super nice. Back at camp, they had a few people from the local towns working there. Some of the ladies that were cooking, the guys that were operating the boats were all indigenous folk. Mm-hmm. Very quiet and, you know, to themselves, which that's fine. But I started conversating with every one of them. I was like, I'm going to talk to you whether you like it or not, man. I just, because I have questions, you know, and they opened up immediately. Most of us knew Spanish, with an exception of maybe two or three of us. Mm-hmm. So what we tried to do was, we were fishing these 30-foot, I'm not even joking, I mean 30 feet, boats that were like this thick, like rotomolded almost. Had all these sections of seat, almost like a John boat. But, what we were doing was we would set two people up to a boat. So we always wanted to make sure at least one of us knew Spanish on that boat. So we were trading off with who to fish with. So every day you'd have a different partner. But yeah, a lot of us just made conversation with these guys and learned so much from, you know, their way of life, how they live, explained how we live, and those boys were stressed when I told them. You know, they're like, what do y'all do over there? And I was like, well, you know, this is how it goes. I wake up in the morning, drink my coffee, and I go to work. They're like, oh, yeah, how long do you work? I'm like, depends. On what? It's like traffic. You know, and that day, you know, depending on your workload. And, yeah, these guys, man, they're like, y'all are crazy. Why? It's the American dream, buddy. You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
So.
When you told them that, obviously they're pretty shocked, but why is that? Like what? I imagine the contrast between their way of life and ours is pretty stark,
right.
But what were you surprised by? Like what were some takeaways that, I guess that you had from conversing with them about their day to day and everything?
I think one of the things that I took away from every conversation I had with these guys was that life is what you make it. And I know it's hard to, I have a hard time seeing that at times. You know, there's days where I just think the world's crumbling down and I'm like, oh my God, man, I just stress out about everything and there's no reason to. Be thankful for what you have. And these folks, man, they do what they have to do to get what they need. And that's it. You know, mm-hmm. nothing more, nothing less. And just the whole wanting thing, you know, it's like, we want more. We always want more. Those guys, they just want to live a simple life. They want to work. They want to be able to support their families. Some of these guys live in these villages. I'm not even joking. They have a village off the river. You can see like the smoke coming from those villages and whatnot. I think even some of our guys went to one of the gentlemen that was a operator. They went to his place off the river and like dropped off food to his wife and his kid, I think. I didn't experience that, but yeah, it's just, you go out there and you experience that and then you come back and you're like, how did we get here? Yeah, I think that's a question I had when we got back and started to deal with everybody that's here, you know, whether it was on traffic or the airplanes. Man, I was getting frustrated on the airplanes. Everyone jumped up immediately as soon as you land. It's like, yo, like, you can't even get off the plane yet. Those folks up front have to get off first. Calm down, you know? Yeah, you question it. You're like, how did I get here? What happened? Where did we go wrong? At least that's the way I feel about it. But I think that was one of the biggest takeaways, just learning to be thankful for what I have. You know, we're here, we're alive, we're breathing. We're getting to enjoy what we like to do when we can. But it's all in our hands, you know? Yeah. And I think we tend to forget, at least I do. I tend to forget that quite a bit. So I think that was like one of the biggest takeaways. Very humbling just to sit there and have lunch with these guys. And no, I'm not trying to like catch praise for this or anything like that, but we were taking naps in the middle of the day. We'd stop in a certain area, you know, where it was wide open. We'd eat lunch and all of us had hammocks. So we'd set up a hammock and, you know, take a nap, and it was hot, but it felt really good just to nap out. I don't really take naps. So for me, it was brand new. And, you know, you get up and you look over and the guy that's running the boat, the operator, he's laying on the ground. So like, it gets in my head. I tell the guys, I'm like, hey man, look, there's three operators. Would three of us be willing to give these guys a hammock at least? You know, like, we're going to come back and see them at some point. You know what I mean? So it's like, it'd be cool to come back and be like, hey, you still have the hammock. Hell yeah. You know? So, most of us were like, yeah, we had already planned that. We're not going to let these guys sleep on the floor. Some trades happened. It was pretty cool. This one guy, Flacco, I don't know if that's his real name or not. He wouldn't give us any other name. He had this machete with a sheath, leather sheath. And one of our buddies took a liking to it. And he's like, what do I have to give you for that, you know? And my buddy had these really nice pliers. And he had this like leather pouch for them that had like a skunk with a banana in its mouth that somebody made for him. And it was a neat little – and the guy kept eyeballing it. So he's like, I know you want it, man. Let's just trade it out. He's like, I want to take that back to my dad. And ended up trading. And he gave him some cash on top of that, you know. And it was just cool, man. Everybody was real laid back. They weren't stressing anything. I think we went down there with the understanding that these guys probably knew a little bit about fishing, but man, you know, most of the things they were talking about, it worked color wise. We let them look at our flies. Be like, what do you think? They'd be like, that red and white, I promise you. And you throw it on, you're catching fish. You're like, these guys know what's up, man. They're not dumb. You know, they know those rivers. They really do.
So speaking to the to your point about the fishing, you had mentioned before we started the podcast that the lodge isn't designed with fly fishing in mind, but more, I guess, conventional. So when you guys showed up with all your fly fishing gear, what were their reactions? And like, did they have any confidence that, you know, you guys were going to be, you know, pulling them fish, or what, how did it all shake down, I guess?
I think, so the owner of the lodge, Mauricio, I stayed up one evening talking to him, and a few of us did. He was just surprised. It's not that he didn't have faith in it, but his understanding and the other folks around there, their understanding of how the fly fishing works, it's like, well, hope you catch fish. You know, it was kind of like that. We went down there prepared. Most of us had, you know, sink tip lines, sink lines. I think I took more than I needed, especially rods that I just didn't touch. I didn't really touch my 10 or my 12 weights. A little overpacked, but it's okay. I mean, it was our first experience down there, so we kind of gauge down on all that. Mm-hmm. But they were really surprised that we were able to put up the fish we put up. I mean, I think everybody caught a pretty big peacock. Some of us caught big payaras. I lost one, which is why I'm planning on going back, because I can't not go back again. I need to land a payara. Man, the way that fish hit, I mean, I've never had anything hit like that before. It was on demand, smacked. I set the hook and she ran up the stream and, you know, like, I mean, pulled my body weight along with her and just boom, came right off.
That's insane. Yeah. What'd she bite on?
It was a white game changer. Like, I don't know what material it is. It's a really old fly that was gifted to me a couple years back. It's mm-hmm. a game changer that's like got a jerk bait motion. You strip it and it has this motion like a hurt bait fish. Uh-huh. I wasn't having the best of luck as far as like quality fish. I mean, all of them were quality fish, but the big ones, you know. And then somebody had a red marker and I'm like, let me borrow that. And there's this bait fish out there. It's a small little white clear fish and it's got this red tail, and peacock bass apparently just tear those up. As soon as I put that red on that tail, they just turned on. So the same fly right here produced it all. It's got that little red tail.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little game changer.
Is that like stacked EP fiber?
I feel like it is. It's really thick. It's not like a feather game changer, but yeah. Man, it really pushes some water. I mean, that Bayata even hit this.
Really?
Yeah, the hook's not very big either. I mean, you can see it. Yeah.
That's freaking awesome.
Yeah, it was cool, man. Especially to watch them. A lot of these peacock bass, they would come up two or three times and smack the fly. I'm not joking. Not to eat it. They were annoyed. So they'd come up and you could see their sides as soon as they'd smack that fly, like, get out of here. And then you'd cast right back in that same spot, strip. I mean, you were like stripping really fast, you know, like hard jerks. So you strip, and they'd just come up and smack it again. And I think on the third time, most of them would just be like, all right, I'm going to eat this fucking bait. I'm not, excuse me. Sorry. I didn't mean to throw that out there. But it was that aggressive. Yeah. You know, I think that's why that came out of me. They're just like, I'm going to eat that. They'd eat it. Man, it was awesome. Just the way they work. I'm sure it'll come out at some point in this conversation, but we went down there towards the end of the season. So all these fish were bedding down and protecting their bed and their fry. So it was tough. It was tough fishing. Even though we all still caught fish, the season to be there is from December to the beginning of February. Apparently, that's when they chase down baits and lures and fish and all kinds of stuff. So we'll see. I'm going to go back in January and find out.
Well, I'm going to see what I can do, see if maybe I could join you on that trip. That would be amazing.
Come on.
I want to. The more we talk about it, the more I think about it.
Oh, it's worth it, man. I promise you.
So what were all the species that were caught on the trip?
Peacock bass. There's four different species down there in those rivers. All four were caught. Matawato, which is this like cichlid type. It's got like a body of a snake head. But it looks like a goby. It was like this brownish color with like these big red eyes, this dark spots, a few dark spots on it. Super like slimy looking fish. My buddy Richard caught that. Sardinita, he caught one of those, which apparently is like hitting the lottery down there from what the guide told us. As soon as that fly hit the water, boom, took. And we're thinking it was a piranha. We bring it up, sardinita, and the guy's like, oh yeah, it's like winning the lotto. Good job. You know, we're like, oh, okay, cool, man. Piranha, bayara. I landed a bayarita, which is a small species of bayara. So we have peacock, bayara, matawaro, sardinita. What else we'll say out there? Oh, somebody actually landed a wolffish.
Really?
Really?
I wasn't with them when they did it, but it was a smaller one. Yeah.
That's sick.
So it was a wolffish. What else? I want to say that's it. If not,
basically everything that was caught was like an aggressive, toothy dude. That's freaking awesome.
Yeah. The last day that we were there, I think that was the last hour of fishing was definitely some of the craziest stuff I've ever seen. I mean, heart was racing. I was fishing with a guy named Craig Cooper. He's from Colorado, trout fisherman. Mm-hmm. It was him and I on a boat with Flockle. And towards the end of the trip, it's getting, you know, a little dusk. And Flockle's like, I'm going to take you guys where there's 15-pound to 20-pound peacock bass. He goes, but this is the deal. You got to explain to him what he has to do to get that fish out of there. He's like, because there's brush everywhere where they're at. There's a lot of just limbs and everywhere. That whole river was running low. So during winter, the water levels raised 20 to 30 feet.
Jeez. Oh, wow.
And nobody's fishing that at that time. The water levels were low. You could see where that water line was at, like during the wintertime. And it was like, man, I would not want to be here when it's raging like that. I mean, even certain parts of the river we pass up, the current's brushing through and you don't really see it up top. And you pass up a submerged tree and you're like, damn, that water's running. You get stuck under there and you're screwed, you know?
Yeah.
We got in a little spot like that. And he's like, explain to him that as soon as that fish eats, he's going to have to set that hook and then let him run a little bit, not a whole lot. And he's like, I'm turning on the outboard and I'm pushing back and we're pulling that fish out. So I turn around and explain it to Craig. So this is what you have to do, man. I know for some odd reason, I feel like I'm not going to get the hits. You are. I'd cast my fly and we're pretty much just drifting down that river section. I'd cast my fly, strip, 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 nothing. He'd land the fly the second time and they ate it up. I mean, they smashed that fly. He took it down. He had it held up right. He did everything right. His fly line snaps. Wow. I mean, the fly line. Yeah.
God, really? Dude, that sucks.
Dude, and we saw the side of this fish. That was 15 to 17 pound peacock.
No,
bass,
bro.
Dude, that's nuts.
Huge, just monstrous. And the way they hit, I've never seen anything hit like that before. It's just like, just immediately, as soon as that fly starts, strip, strip, boom, biggest blow up you've ever seen, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
God, that's freaking amazing.
And they, the first thing they would do, they're not dumb. They take and they run down to the bottom and get stuck in some roots or something and just, you're not getting them out of there.
Damn. That's insane.
Yep.
Dude, that's freaking nuts.
Yeah, we had, he actually hit five of them and lost every one of them. The fly line snapped every time. These fish, man, the power that they held, I wouldn't know what to compare it to because, I mean, I'm, you know me, I don't, it's not like I'm out there chasing monsters all the time, but my buddy Richard had just come back from a rooster fish trip on the beach. And his words to me were, dude, I caught that rooster fish. You saw how big it was. I said, yeah, it's a big fish. He goes, these peacock bass fight harder.
Really?
That's insane.
Damn.
Yep. Yep.
Dude, that's freaking awesome. So I got two questions. The first one is, they're basically the same question. The first one is, what was the feeling of the first fish that you hooked into? And the second one is, what was the feeling of when you caught that massive peacock?
I can give you that. Yeah. The first one I landed, I was trying all these big flies, you know, because that's, we were under the impression that they want big flies. They're not going to mess around with anything small. And I'm not even joking. The first day I rotated through maybe about 30 different flies. Mm-hmm. And I had tied this one. I got it off the, one of the sites from Florida that was like a peacock bass. I don't even know what it's called. I saw it and I thought it looked neat. And I just tied a few up in different color variations. And, oh, here it is. So it's just some flash, some hackle, some bead chain eye, and some yellow and orange marabou. And I got to this fly right here. And we get to this area where we start to see them blowing up. And I cast in there, and it was probably my smallest peacock bass I caught. That was the first one. Mm-hmm. It hit and my heart just dropped and I did it on 10 weight. So I was like, okay, cool. Like, I don't know what to expect right now. And I'm not gonna lie. I trout set that fish. I really did. Just cause, we were telling each other, we're like, hey, you got to strip set. You got to point that rod at that fish. I trout set that fish. I still kept it on. I brought it up and, boated it. It was relieving because I'm like, okay, I caught a fish, you know, like,
yeah,
I'm not that worry went out the window of getting skunked in Colombia, making that trek just, you know, for nothing almost. Now I wouldn't say that even if I did get skunked, but it was relieving. It was fun. It was a bit of a challenge. Now going to the big one. shortly before that, I stuck my buddy in the back of the ear with a fly.
I saw that photo.
So, oh man. Sorry, Richard. Dude, it was a freak accident, and it was just weird how it happened. The weird thing was we were both facing one way, and when I brought that fly back, I was double hauling it. It wrapped around his head and hit him on the opposite ear. I don't even know how that happened, but I think there was a little bit of gust because it rained on us that day. A little gust came in and just happened to push that fly offline. As soon as I'm bringing it forward, I hear, oh, and I'm like, no, man. I turn around and he's like, got this big fly just sticking out to the back of his ear. And he's like, did the barb go in? And we're like looking at it. Barb didn't go in. Luckily, he just yanks it out. And I mean, I apologize a million times. I'm like, man, I'm so sorry. That's never happened. And he's like, dude, it happens. He's like, I take people fishing all the time. I've done it. You're going to do it. Don't stress it. And I felt a little weird. You know, I was just like, man, felt bad. I didn't know how to like get past that point. So we go up into this lagoon. I mean, we had to work to get the boat in there. We walked through about maybe 70 yards of this tiny little section of river going into a lagoon, and it was all just branches and mud. And I mean, you would be down into your nuts in mud pushing this boat out there. So I was a little worried because I don't know what's out there. You know, you don't know what you're stepping in. Some of the trees had vines in them, and these vines had like these big old thorns. Richard got a few in his feet. We get into this lagoon and I start laying into a few of them. And we're talking and we pass up this big old tree that's just got roots growing out. And, I don't even remember what I was thinking, but I made this beautiful cast and I landed right on the edge and I just two strips and I feel the tug. And like I said, I was catching some smaller fish. So I said, you know what? It's a small fish. I see her come belly side up and I immediately screamed. I was like, Richard, do you see this? And he's like, dude, keep it on. And he coached me through the whole thing. He did a phenomenal job. He's like, hey, man, hold on. Do this. You know, he's like, move her off to this side, move her off to that side. I was just too excited. We got to boat her and man, that moment's going to live in my head forever. When I picked her up, there was a mutual respect shared. I could feel it. You know, the energy was there and I picked her up and she was a monster, man. Even those pictures don't do any justice, man. I hate that. I feel like pictures never do justice. You can catch a huge fish and you take this picture and it's like, there's always going to be somebody looking at it and say, well, that's not that big. And man, you know what? She was right under 11 pounds. I'm calling her 11 pounds. That's my first double digit fish on the fly rod. The feeling that I had, the adrenaline, man, dude, those fish don't play, you know, she was going for that, like for the debris that was like submerged under what she was heading for that. And I could not let her go, man. I just sat there and I fought her like, you're not going, you're coming up on the boat. Such a beautiful fish, man. And it was a female. The males have this little hump on their head, like a rhino.
Uh-huh.
It was the female. So, I did feel a little bit bad about pulling her off her bed, but, you know, it comes with the territory, Yeah, I can't even explain the feeling to you because I still have that excitement right now about it. You know, those fish, man, they make you work for it. You know what I mean? It doesn't come easy. It does not come easy.
See, I've caught a few over double digit fish on the fly rod, and none of them are aggressive like a cichlid or bass species. You know, carp are kind of big and lazy, and redfish tend to do the same thing. They dig, but they're not just full of power. And so I can't even imagine the fight that goes on when you're catching a fish like a peacock bass that's double digit. I mean, were you shaking? Was your heart pumping? Did you get dizzy? I mean,
I didn't get dizzy. I was stoked because honestly, it was the second day before we left.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, I was catching decent sized fish, but everyone had already gotten, you know, a 5-6 pounder. And I'm like, man, that's where I was like learning. I was like, you know what? Just be thankful. You're here. You're fishing in Colombia. I mean, who the hell would have thought if you asked me 5 years ago, hey, man, do you think you're going to fly fish in Colombia? Hell no. I thought that was just, you know, Jeremy Wade style. I was like, no, there's no way I can do that trip. No way. It's never going to happen. So So I think I started to get into that feeling right before I landed that fish. It was really weird. It's like the fish gods were like, you know what? You learned your lesson. Here's a big one, you know? I'm telling you, everybody had already caught, you know, 12, there was 12 pounders caught. There was 12, Casillo caught a 12.7 pound that day. We all came back to the camp just excited. We're like, yeah, everyone caught fish. And Casillo's like, I landed a 12.7. I'm like, I don't care. I got 11. I don't care if it's the smallest one. It was a big fish. I was just stoked. I mean, this, I lipped her and I was shaking. I was like, oh my God, man. Like, I don't know what to do with my hands, you know? I felt like Ricky Bobby. Watching her go was another thing. That tail was thick, man. I mean, it was like a big carp, you know? Like, they get those really thick tails.
Yeah.
It was thick, man. That's where all their power's at. They don't play, man. They run. When they run, they run. I mean, you're sitting there and you're worried. I mean, there was a point where I almost felt like I was going to fall out of the boat because she went for a good run for a second. And I just brought her right back, you know. Yeah, that was an aggressive take. All of them were aggressive, even the smaller ones, man. Those guys, they don't care, dude. Butterfly peacock bass, don't put it past them, man. They're, for their small size, you know, they may not get very big. I say that, but they also said that the butterfly peacock bass, which is a smaller species, can get up to 8 pounds. That's a big freaking fish, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, even the small ones, man, they came up, they ate it, and they're like, I'm running. And they'd sit there and pull drag, dude. I think at one point I had all my drag set down on my one of my eight weights, and I caught a decent size one. I mean, if I didn't have a scale with me, but if I had to put one on there, I'd say three and a half pounds. I've caught 3.5 pound bass on the fly rod. Dude, these fish don't play. It felt like a carp. You know what I mean? Like a big carp or something. They just take and run. And my drag was set down all the way. So it's like, still pulling.
That's so insane.
It was impressive, man. These guys, they're out in the wilderness. You know, they're eating big stuff. So, oh, Paku. That was another
Paku.
I didn't. Casillo caught a fucking monster Paku, man. Monster.
That's awesome.
If I had to tell you what they had to do for that fish, man, you wouldn't believe me. You wouldn't believe me. Because it was.
Did they catch it on that big grasshopper?
It was blasphemous, man. So, we spent. I told you about the first camp, right? The huts and all that. And, they had like a section off to the other side where like the kitchen, and there was like another gazebo there that they would hang out under. And that's where we'd eat dinner. Well, the second camp was just a bunch of tents lined up on a beach on the Tuparo River. It wasn't the Vichada anymore. It was the Tuparo. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you could walk to the river in like 10 seconds. The first day that we got there, we only fished that section for 2 days. The first day we all got back to camp, and Casillo was talking about the new, there was a fourth guy there taking people out in a boat, young kid. Casillo kept talking about how excited he was to take people out because he himself was into like fishing. So he's like, oh, I want to show you guys. Like, oh. So I think they had gotten some bites from some Paku and couldn't really get them out. We were throwing big J Wood hoppers. So these big old hoppers, I mean, they're one aught. We got to a section where we saw them blowing up, and we drifted down the river and casted one after another, and they wouldn't smack anything. Once we'd get past that section of river, then they'd start blowing it up again. The last day there, some crazy stuff happened on Casillo and Richard's boat. That guy that they went out with, the young kid, there were some real grasshoppers that were like yay big, this vibrant green color. And when they would open their wings, there were this dark purple color. It was the craziest thing I'd ever seen. And they were everywhere. The guy took one, tore it apart, took the body and put it on that hopper itself. And it was weird. It was like maybe the intestines and the blood and all that called for them. But Casillo ends up landing a really big Paku with that.
Dang, that's insane.
Yep, huge Paku. And then Richard sticks this monster Payara his last day there. He shows us a video of that young kid, because this Payara took the fly, ran down under some like submerged limbs. This kid puts on some goggles and goes swimming in there to get it out.
Dude, that's dedication.
This current is flowing, dude. I don't know how fast it's flowing, but it's flowing. And they show me the video, and I'm like, dude, this guy's got a set on him, because I don't care who it's for. I'm not going in that water. Another thing they brought up that I didn't think about, there's other Bayadas hanging out down there. They see any kind of motion, their whole deal is they go up there and they maim their prey. You know what I mean? So like, dude, this guy could have got cut up. Who knows? But yeah, this kid went down there and he got that Bayada untangled and brought it up. Yeah, that's a guide right there.
Jesus,
dude, that's insane.
Wild. Yeah. Yep.
Dude has some stones.
Oh, absolutely. Because you wouldn't catch. And then they brought that one back. We actually ate that one.
So how was that?
That was going to be a question I had.
It was good. They lightly fried it. A lot of bone. A lot of bone. I mean, some of the boniest fish I've ever had. I mean, every bite, you're like, okay, I don't want to die. But it didn't stop me from eating it, enjoying it. And then we had piranha soup that morning, too, before we left.
What was that?
How was that?
That was really good. Really good. Very good. Not very gamey. The broth probably helped out with that.
Uh-huh.
But man, all the food was phenomenal. Some of the stuff they were cooking up for us there, I was like, y'all know about bacon carbonara? What's up? You know, like this monster plate of bacon carbonara and then like a mango salad with slaw on it. And you're like, this may not mix well, but we'll see. And you dig into it and you're like, that doesn't matter. It's good. You know, just eating everything there. That's but,
awesome, dude.
But yeah, man, the variety of fish that were caught. The second, if I had to judge it, the second spot was probably the best for fishing. It's a little bit more secluded. You're not seeing as many indigenous folks because these indigenous folks, you pass up a beach and they're beached down there for the night and they're doing, you know, they're hunting and fishing there. And then they're moving on the next day. So they're living that life, you know, they're about it. So we'd see some of those guys on the Vichada and the Tuparo. You didn't see another soul.
Really?
It was just us. Yeah. So it was like, hey, man, this area is closed off for you guys pretty much. It was really neat. Saw some caiman my last day there.
I was about to ask about that.
Yeah, we got to this one section and it was kind of like catty cornered off to the right. And we're going in there and they're like, hey, the guide taps me on the shoulder. He's like, look. And I'm like, oh man, small little caiman, like 3 foot. Super cute, you know. We like pull up on it and he just kind of like slowly goes underwater. He's like, I don't want anything to do with you guys. Cool. The day before, it was getting dark. We passed the beach area up, going back to camp, and I thought I saw one. I was pretty sure I saw one. But I didn't get a good look at it because we had already passed them. Like, I think there was a caiman, whatever. Last day is when I took that video of that one on the beach, and I was maybe like 5 feet away from that thing. Because
that's insane.
Flacco was pushing us in. And I'm like, yo, hold on, man. Like, I don't want to get that close, you know? And like, I see it like kind of turn around, jump in. I'm like, no, dude, back out before I fall in and I'm dinner, man. I'm not going to do this. Not on my last day, man.
That's freaking insane, man.
River otters.
Really?
Six foot river otters. Who would have thought? It looks like a small child. Weird. That's
crazy. I know. When I think about otters, I don't know why. I always think about like coastal. I wouldn't think in a river like that you'd see otters. That's freaking awesome.
Yeah, they were big. I actually mistaken one for a black panther.
Really?
Yeah, because I saw him going up into some brush on a hill, and I saw this thick old black tail. And I was like, that's a panther. That's a pantera. The guy's like, no. They call them agua de perros de agua.
Really?
I was like, dog not water. Yep. Water dogs, you know? Yeah, and I was like, no. That was a pantera. I'm like arguing with him. I'm like, that was a pantera. I know. And then they start showing me pictures. I'm like, dang. I was an otter, man. That's how big they are, man. That's just how big they are. They're thick, you know? It's like, wow, that's insane. No snakes. Didn't see any snakes.
Really?
And we kind of pushed around for some. You know, I wanted to see a Bushmaster. Not up close, but, you know.
You seen one?
Yeah, just to see a snake. But no snakes whatsoever. Not very many came in. I mean, like that one I saw was, like I said, it was the last day that we were fishing.
Uh-huh.
So, but still, blue macaws. We saw one of those, I always forget the name of them, that monkey that came out on Ace Ventura. We saw one of those like kind of pushing up on an iguana in the tree. It was kind of funny to watch. We saw quite a bit of iguanas, some caracaras, a lot of bats. We went through this one little area where there was this huge tree that fell over the year before. And man, it was just filled with tiny little bats that were like this big.
Really?
And yeah. And at night when we pushed out of that lagoon, They started flying up and down that little section, and me and Nick and I are just, you know, bobbing and weaving, you know, like, man, I'm not trying to get the rays, dude. It was weird, man. Really weird. Insane. It was cool just to be that close to all that. And all you'd hear throughout the day is birds and, you know, the water moving around and, you know, the fish and all that good stuff. It was crazy. Some of the most peaceful times that I've ever had.
That's awesome. Did it take you back to, like, you know, the primal human just kind of going back to nature?
I'm going to say no, just because of the fact that I've never done anything like that.
Yeah.
So it didn't take me back. It just opened my eyes to what's really out there. You know, you see it in the movies, but living it, I mean, I was doused in sweat every day. Uh-huh. I didn't care, man. I didn't care. We had waters and beers at all time. So I think we bought like almost 300 beers in the small town before we went out there, and they were gone in 6 days, bro.
Yeah.
You know, we were drinking on the boats.
Yeah.
We wouldn't get crazy, but, you know, we'd take a sixer with us, and between two of us, you know, we'd have a few beers. Some of the guys didn't drink. So whoever got lucky was like, hey, I got six beers, you know, whatever. But, you drink back at the camp. We bought a couple bottles of rum in town before we went to camp. And, you know, we drank a little rum. You know, did some other stuff and whatnot, but it was fun. It was a good time, man.
That's really good time. Awesome, man. Seems like something that I definitely need to do. I mean, I love, you know, going and seeing other cultures, and, you know, that's one thing that, so I went to the Bahamas the same week that you were gone. I was in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
And, so we went on a cruise. So of course most things were Americanized, but, whenever we went to Grand Bahama, we docked at Freeport, and then we went and rented a van and drove across the island to, I think it was called Grand Lucayan National Park or something like that.
Okay.
And met some locals over there and hung out on the beach, and the beach wasn't packed at all. The water was a little choppy. That was one thing with the whole trip, is that the water quality wasn't the best. They had a low pressure system hovering above, you know, north of the Bahamas, and it was just causing all sorts of issues. But I mean, the beach was still absolutely gorgeous. And I have a buddy that's from the Bahamas, and so he gave me a list of things to try while I was there. And so I got to, you know, get in the, you know, a little bit of experience from some of the local stuff, and experience some of the culture there. And that's just me. I love experiencing cultures. And I ended up on the last Bahaman day that we were there. We were on Nassau, and I went and walked around because I wanted to get a drink out of a coconut, you know.
Right.
And that's just something I'd never done. I wanted,
you have to do that.
You have to. And I missed my opportunity the day before. Or no, earlier that day, I missed the opportunity because I was out snorkeling, and they had gone and done it, and I didn't know they were going to do it. And so I missed out, and I was like, I'm going to go find one. And so I ended up walking around, and I got me a coconut. It wasn't like in town, like it was on the Americanized side. It was gated in by the, right, by the port. But then I grabbed my coconut and I walked around. I was like, I'm going to go experience this town. And I ended up, I don't even know how I got there. I ended up in some cobblestone alleyway. That there was like pharmacies and liquor stores, and it was crazy. And you're just pretty much being harassed by the locals to buy something, and it was something that I never experienced before, but it was freaking awesome. It was cool. And so if I end up going to Colombia, like, dude, I want to experience all the local stuff.
You'll definitely get that going out there. Everything's so different. Just sayings, phrases, measurement. I bring that up because we were in Villa Vicencio. We packed very light, because the charter plane actually charges us anything that was over 200 pounds, including your luggage and yourself, was, I think it was like $3 or like 3 pesos per kilogram, anything over 200. So, when we got into town, we actually stopped by the pharmacy and stuff, and it was in a mall. There was a Columbia store in there too. It was kind of funny. And we were all pretty hungry, so we stopped by the food court, and, you know, there's all these different varieties of foods you can eat. Some of the guys ate hot dogs, which I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to eat a hot dog in Colombia, but, you know, to each their own. I saw a taco place. So I was like, you know, you can't really screw up a taco, right?
Right.
So go over there, and they've got carnitas, and I'm like, I'll take a carnita burrito. And that guy Besnick is with me. He's standing next to me. He's like, I'm gonna get the same. I was like, cool. And I was like, hey, I asked the young lady that works there. I was like, how big is that burrito? And she does this number right here. She grabs her arm and she does this, like, right? And then Nick looks. He like slowly looks over at me. He's like, does she know you, Marco? And she's like staring at me, and I'm like, Nick, stop, dude. She knows you, huh? Stop. So the whole trip, they're like, you know, we'd get back to camp, like, hey man, how big was that fish? And I started doing that. I would put my hand down, you know, from like the tip of your finger back to here is just like, I'm taking this back with me. Another phrase we brought back was kachimba. Get chimba. Yeah. So it's like chimba's like, oh, badass. You know, it's like that phrase. So I've kind of been utilizing that here and there and just kind of stealing it a bit, you know. Either just the folks down there, first of all, the driving, insane, man. I don't know how there's understand why there's no insurance. I can say that much. Yeah. They don't have insurance, you know, everybody just to get around in town, you have to have a motorcycle and you're cutting through vehicles and nobody uses a blinker light. People cut each other off. But you know what? One thing that I appreciated, people honk at each other, but nobody's getting off with aggression. Like what? You know, none of that. Everyone was on there understanding this. Like, hey, we're just trying to get somewhere. So if we can cut somebody off, maybe that person let us through. There was times where we got, you know, kind of teed off where like it was a merging lane and the guy next to us would be like, hey, can you mind if I get in front of y'all? I got to, you know, and the guy would be like, yeah, go ahead. Like they're not in any rush. It's really crazy, man. Nobody, not one time did we see anybody get mad with each other. It was the oddest thing. There's like 7 million people in Bogota.
Really?
You know? Yeah. It's a lot of people, man. Dude, I don't know, man, but I almost felt like at one point I was like, man, I feel like I live here now, you know, and it was kind of a nice feeling. You didn't feel like you weren't home ever. Yeah. If I had to live like that for the rest of my life, I wouldn't be disappointed. I'll say that much.
That's freaking awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's the difference in dialect from, you know, Colombian Spanish to, you know, I guess American Spanish?
So, well, depends what kind of American Spanish we're talking about. Cause you know, there's Tex-Mex, right?
That's
a little bit of what I've got. Tex-Mex. I mean, I was born in Texas, you know, grandparents, they're from Mexico, but they picked up on the Tex-Mex thing quick. So did I.
Yeah.
But, it's just more proper.
I see.
It's proper Spanish. It's faster. Certain words that, you know, they're similar. And then there's some that are just like, what did you say? Like I said, I don't even remember what I said. And they were like, what is that? And I'm like, you don't know what that is. And then we kind of met in the middle. It was like, oh, okay. Now I know. Oh, it's pretty similar though. More than it's not. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that's, I mean, I don't know a lot of Spanish anymore, but back when I used to pave roads, I picked up on a lot of Spanish and I noticed that I would hear differences between the guys that we worked with that were from Mexico and the guys that grew up in Texas. You know, there's different dialects from more of a Tex-Mex or Americanized Spanish than like legitimate Spanish, from Mexico. And so I assumed that it would probably be different down there in Colombia too.
Some of the natives from there, they speak a different language. Really? They have their own language. Yeah, I caught on two guys talking, two of our guides. We met up with another boat and we ate lunch and took a nap. And I could hear them talking and it wasn't Spanish. Then one of the gentlemen that joined us on this trip, his name's William. He lives in Medellin. He's from there. Nice guy. I mean, just he's the one we got most of our information on, like casting technique, how to strip, you know, when to strip, where to cast. He was the one who told me, he's like, oh, it's, yeah, they, you know, they're indigenous. They have their own language in their villages and everybody's village almost has a different dialect too. It's kind of weird, man. It's like a bunch of worlds all in one. It was cool to see that.
That's awesome.
So speaking of techniques, man, what are some things that you picked up on trying to fish for these fish in the areas you guys were fishing?
You have to be patient. Even with a sink tip line, it became a problem at times because those fish, they're not pressured, but they're not dumb. So if they saw a fly sink so fast, they're just like, I ain't eating it, you know? It was almost like intermediate line was the perfect shot for this. I know before I went out there, I thought we were going to fish like those big waterfalls, you know, for the Bayada. No, that's not what we fished. I thought we were going to, we didn't. That's fine. No big deal. But, you know, I bought full sink line for that stuff right there. You know, so you don't even need it. Intermediate line was perfect. With a sink tip line, what was happening was you'd cast your fly, your line sinking quicker than that fly, and it's bringing it down quick. So those fish were weary about stuff like that. So all of us immediately switched over to our intermediate, and we're like, dude, just cast this. You know, I think the few times that I used the sink tip line, I still caught fish, but I caught more with intermediate line. So for one, line was important. Leader didn't have to be long. We used 60 to 40 pound, like 3 feet tied onto, if you were going after like biota and whatnot, we were putting like a 2 foot section of bite wire right behind it. Mm-hmm. And you know, you got a 5 foot section of leader. They're not very leader shy, so you could smack the shit out of the water. They're not going to spook. The strip, you know, like how to strip, like aggressive strip, and you know, either moving it really quick or you had to play with it. It just really depended. If you were casting in a certain area, I'd cast that fly out and I'd strip it in really quick. And if I didn't get any attention, then I'd cast it out and kind of give it a break, strip, aggressive, let it sink, strip, aggressive, let it sink. A lot of times I was getting bites like that. And what sucked was when you'd get a bite, because there was a lot of fish that were missed, you'd get a bite right when you're going to go pick that line up again. You know, and it's like, oh man, well, there goes that. That, yeah. Or like I said earlier, they were smacking that fly away. So it's like, you think you got a strike. No, they're just pushing it off. They want it off their nest, you know? You could see their nests everywhere. You'd go up to like a little shallow area and there's holes everywhere. It's insane. We didn't get a whole lot of sight casting in because, these guys are sitting deep, mm-hmm. But there was a few times where we did see like a couple peacock bass, like kind of wolfing it together, just cruising the shoreline, and you're like, oh, look. But by the time we said anything, they booked it. They're so fast. The blink of an eye, man, you missed that fish. You really had to be on point. So, like, we're just attentive the whole time. Yeah, we're blind casting because you can't sight cast these guys, really. But the whole time, your eyes are just peeled because you can't miss it, you know? That picked up some new casting techniques, thanks to Richard and Casillo. Water loading your line, you know what I mean? Just...
Yeah.
There was times where we were in some tight spots and that whole double haul wasn't working for us. You know, you got snagged up. I felt bad for the guide. At one point, I got snagged up on this little section of river that we went up into. Super clear waters, beautiful. The water was just running. Saw a huge catfish chilling. We just passed him up too quick and I'm like, he's not going to eat. So I didn't even attempt it. But just, you know, being careful about where you cast and whatnot. Water loading line, like I said, placement was a big thing out there just because, I mean, there's low hanging branches everywhere. And a lot of those peacock bass were, guess where? Right under the branch. So you definitely had to be on point. Picked up a little bit of that. Fighting big fish. You know, it's like I said, it's not my forte. I'm not out there constantly just chasing after giants, right? So yeah, just learning to fight the big fish and tire that fish out. Apparently peacock bass, the big ones, they have three big pushes. So they'll go for a run, you stop them, they'll kind of chill out, go for another run, stop them, they'll chill out. After that third run, usually they go belly up. That's what happened on that one when I fought her. She finally went belly up and Richard's like, yep, swooped her up in the net. She was tired out. And then when we put her back in, we tried not to hold them out of water for too long. Mm-hmm. We treated them with respect, you know, just like we would do any fish around here, right? Especially we're in a different country and we have no right to those fish over anybody else. So, you know, we took her out quick, took some pictures, put her right back in the net into the water so she can kind of, you know, get her energy back to take off again and go take care of her babies. But yeah, I still screwed up. I can't even say that I brought back a whole lot of technique with me. But I adapted. I feel like any of us would. I think you guys are better at that than I am. You guys have been doing it longer. You're going to adapt quick if you go. You know, you're going to get hung up a few times and be like, okay, I can't do this. So you're going to have to like roll cast in certain areas. It's a great learning experience for sure. You know, it kind of teaches you like whether you have it or not, or whether you need more work. I definitely need more work on a lot of different things, but it's a different style fishing. If I had to compare it to anything, it'd be like river bass fishing.
Yeah.
You know, if you're just kind of strolling down, the only difference is you don't have to adjust your kayak. So you got somebody doing that for you. But yeah, that's what I would say as far as I did learn a few things, more than a few things. Did I bring that back with me? I don't know. We'll find out. I haven't fished since I got back. So we'll see.
So how do you think that the experience down there is going to affect how you fish back home now?
I think I'm definitely going to, I got to watch how I say this. I did say it while I was down there. I said, I'm going to go back and murder some bass, you know, but I got to watch myself because, you know, I'm going to go down to the lower Colorado at some point and I'm just probably going to skunk out. And I'm going to sit here and go back to the drawing board and be like, what happened? But, I don't know. We'll see, man. I mean, like I said, I haven't fished since I got back. We've been busy. I just work piled up while I was gone. Surprisingly, I came back to all this work and all these customers, you know, reaching out and whatnot. So whatever, I'm not complaining about it, but yeah. At some point I'll make time to fish again and, you know, get back after some reds. I definitely want to go and hit a river system up soon and kind of, you know, utilize what I thought I figured out down there and work it a little bit better, because I'm not going to lie, river fishing isn't my thing either. I love to do it. But as far as technique wise, I think what I learned down there is really going to be useful here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see how it affects your fishing here, and hopefully it affects it for the better, and you get better quality fish here because of it. Because it sounds like a trip of a lifetime.
It was, you know, Casillo's putting two more trips together for this coming up year, so. If y'all are interested, let me know. I'll put you in contact with the guy. Dude, it was worth every cent. Just everything about the trip was amazing. I feel like I left out so much information, but I mean, we'd have to sit down and have a few beers for me to get into, you know, and actually get into like what everything meant.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I want to say we all kind of took the same experience out from it. Everyone seemed, when we got there, were kind of reserved, and it was like, well, you know, you think, you know, I think we all had days where we got humbled, and we all walked away from it like with this bond, not only between the group itself, because like a few of us didn't know each other very well or at all, but this bond with Colombia itself, like realizing how beautiful it was. And, you know, I think some of us talked about going back. Some of us are like, hey, you know, we're going to wait a few years. Some other people have some life stuff going on that, you know, some are expecting kids and stuff. So they're like, hey, we're going to wait a few years, but everyone plans on going back. So, I mean, what's more to say, you know, the lodge owner, Mauricio, said some of the nicest things about us one night. And he was just like, man, like the people I want to cater to are people like you guys. The ones that want to come down here and enjoy the experience of the fishing, not to be catered to, even though we're catering to you guys, but to a certain extent, he said he had trouble with some folks that came in are a little uppity, you know, and they're like, oh, you know, I want my eggs cooked a certain way. And I think he said his wife cooked the eggs like three different times and they couldn't get it right for them. And it's like, man, I'm not worried about the eggs. Just scramble them. I'm ready to go. Let's get on this river. That's what we're doing every morning. We'd eat, book it. You know, we'd go and hit the head real quick. Grab your stuff, grab your rods, let's go. That's we want to be out there. We came here for there. When we get back, we'll enjoy this, you know. So yeah, I think I think everybody kind of changed from that trip, man. We all came back different people.
Damn, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we can end on a better note than that, but that sounds like it was a phenomenal trip. We all definitely need to get together and sit down off the podcast and talk a little more, and I'm interested in going. I don't know if I'd be able to make it happen this coming January or not, so it may be.
There's another one coming up in February too.
Okay.
I know it's only a month extra, but still. Yeah. Casillo would be doing both. I won't go in February because you know I can't really go on both.
Yeah,
but I'm definitely, I already told him, I was like, save my seat in January. I want to go down and see what that's like. I've already fished the end of the season. I know what that was like. That was great. No, I want my Bayada, you know.
Right.
I'm going to get it in January. Now that I've got a better idea on what they're going after and how, I'm definitely getting my Bayada in January.
Going to be prepared for sure.
Oh, man. I'm going to go mainly for that. So. awesome.
Well, we appreciate you hopping on and sharing
the story with us.
And yeah, man, it was fun. And those of y'all that are watching, we appreciate y'all listening to the end, and we'll catch y'all next time.
This has been Wildlife Outdoors. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Facebook at Wildlife Outdoors and on Instagram at wild.life.outdoors. Let's go live life on the wild side.